Well, I've narrowed it down to 64 pages of notes. Oh, I'm kidding, of course. How's everybody doing?
Good.
I kind of like it up here in the dark. This is okay. It's all right. Just for our agenda for the week, I'd like to prepare you for what you're going to learn. And just so you know that when I do something like this, I learn more than all of you. So it's to my benefit to do things like this. And I hope that you gather something from what I have learned in the last year. And first of all, I want to thank everybody so much, Matt, for giving me a whole year to work on this. And I hope it shows. Oh, I hope it shows. First of all, tonight we're going to talk about Before I Say I Do. And I'll tell you right quick, if you've already been married, you've already said I do, you're not too late. Okay, this is just, I needed a title. Okay, and that does set it up. Tomorrow night we're going to talk about establishing family relationships. Saturday, leading your family to heaven. The Sunday morning class, setting expectations. And all this related to how what God does for us as well as how we should use it in our daily lives. The Sunday lessons, Jesus, the paradigm, and a paradigm is like a model or an example that we should follow. Paradigm of our teacher, father, husband, and coach. And the Sunday PM lessons, we want to roll it all up and put it in a nice little package and talk about the purpose and mission of the family and everybody therein. So, to get started, I got to thinking. If I were to offer you something, one thing, let's say that some of you aren't going to be here tomorrow night or Saturday night or Sunday, and this is your only shot. If I could offer you one thing that would make all of your relationships better, would you take it? And it's something that everybody in here is capable of doing and has done in the past. I got your interest, don't I? Now, there's one little simple skill I want to teach you right up front because it's so important to what we do the rest of the week. The art of saying thank you. Now, you're probably thinking, okay, I say thank you all the time. I bought a Slurpee at 7-Eleven a while ago, and I said thank you to the clerk. I'm talking about the art of really saying thank you. And there is so much power in this little thing. So right up front, I'm going to give you a little golden nugget, something that you can take with you whether you're here the rest of the week or not, and that is the art of saying thank you. How to say thank you. Now, you've seen that on TV before, on commercials and stuff, where they have thank you, and then they'll have in French and Italian and Swahili, or they'll say Merry Christmas or something like that. That's not what I'm talking about. You know, gracias, danke, I don't know. That's not what we're talking about. There's a formula for saying thank you in a very positive and strong manner that helps you to do something and accomplish something in saying thank you. Now, what is the purpose for saying thank you? It's because we appreciate something, right? So it's important that thank yous be honest and sincere. Very important. But they also need to be specific, and they need to repeat back the action. You're thinking, well, why would I want to do that? I supervise 15 people. And I have found out in learning this and practicing it that if you say thank you to the right things, people will do anything in the world for you. That's just amazing. And why do you suppose that is? People like to be appreciated, first of all, and people like to please each other. Now, there's people that don't. There's, you know, sociopaths and such like that don't like to do this. But for the most part, people like to please other people. And our society is a wonderful thing. And society in the church is a terrific thing because we should be more thankful than anybody else. But people, even people on the street, like to say thank you. Why do you think those YouTube videos and those YouTube TV shows and America's Funniest Videos where these proposals and people are paying forward or paying back, why do you think those bring tears to so many people's eyes? People like to be appreciated for what they do. And, well, I wish that was me that had done that. And that gets the ticker going, doesn't it? Brings a tear to the eye. But be specific and repeat back the action. Now, Let's practice that for a minute. Matt, I want to thank you for giving me a year to work on this, because it allowed me to explore opportunities that I never would have been able to before, and it really encouraged me, the fact that you asked me at all. Now, I could have said, thanks, Matt. And he might have got the idea. But now I have told him specifically what I'm thanking him for and the effect it had on me. And what that does, what do you think that does? That tells that person what's important to me. And let me tell you what, we're going to find out tonight that knowledge is absolute power. Knowing other people, knowing your spouse, knowing your children, knowing their congregation, elders, knowing the congregation, the people around you, knowing the other elders, this is power. And not a power to be wielded foolishly, but it's a brotherhood power. It's the power that we have as the family of God. We should be engaged and know one another. And it's a primary thing to a personal relationship with a spouse too, isn't it? Tell however, we'd already went over that really, but tell how whatever it was helped or affected you. And don't ever follow thank you with but. Uh-huh. Little Johnny, I want to thank you for cleaning your room. It really did me well that you cleaned your room this time without being asked, and you did such a good job, but. Well, all the thank you just went out the window, by the way, because the next time you say thank you, Johnny's waiting for the but. He don't hear the he don't hear the first part. All he's listening for is but. So the art of saying thank you is very powerful, because it lets me tell you what's important to me. It's a gracious and loving way of me not only just thanking you and showing my appreciation, but telling you this is important to me. And you know what? You're probably going to do something for me again to try to get that, because you like being appreciated. And now you're going to want to share something else with me. And when you see me down next time and you have an opportunity to do something like that again, I know how to cheer up Dave. I know how to take care of that. I know how to encourage this brother. Now, do you see the power in that? I can encourage you because I know a little bit more about you and I understand what you need. So before you say I do, wow, that's a big thing. Again, if you've already said I do, if you're already married, it's not too late, because it's never too late to strengthen and build bonds of marriage or any relationship. It's never too late to work on it and work harder on it. And it's okay to say, you know, all these years I've been a fool. I really should have thanked you more. Thank you for doing the dishes the way you do them. I don't have to think about it. It really helps me out. I love that when it's done like that. Or whatever the specifics you have to have. Thank you when you picked up everything, that you straightened that up. I mean, look, there's silly little things that show that we're engaged and that we are paying attention to the fine details, and that our relationship is solid because I'm paying attention to you. And thank you for going to work today. Kathy thanked me not long back for her not having to work. That was special. So what happens usually? A couple fall in love, right? Boy meets girl, you know the story. They fall in love, and hopefully they get married. A couple of rug rats come along. Ankle biters, whatever you want to call them. Got his little family here. And later on, what happens? They're cruising along and they're, okay, I got my paycheck, I've got my house, I've got 1,600 cars in the driveway. Three of them run. So we're cooking along and life is just going along, and I've had a couple of dips in the road, but we've gotten through them okay. And eventually, little Johnny and little Sally don't really want to have anything to do with mom anymore, or dad. And that's the scariest thing, by the way, as a parent, is your kids distancing themselves from you. Little Johnny doesn't want to have anything to do with mom or dad anymore. And you worry, don't you, as parents? How many of you got teenage kids? I used to. They're all grown up now. But you think about that, right? And it bothers you when those little bonds of communication go away, doesn't it? Well, wouldn't that bother you if your bond with your spouse went away like that? Shouldn't that worry you that you're not communicating with your spouse? So together this week, what we want to do is help build these things so that never happens to you. Your relationship to your children, your relationship to one another, we want to help strengthen that and give you some skills and some tools that should help you not to have to ever go through that. Or if you do, if you see that start happening, that you'll have something you can reach into a toolbox and grab and say, I'm going to try this. And these are all biblical principles. These are things that Jesus himself did, that Paul, the way they coached and nurtured the disciples and those around them, the way Jesus did with the 70, the way he did with his apostles. These are things that the way he treated people. And we're just going to look at how Jesus treated people. And if we treat our spouses and our congregations and our families that way, we should be stronger and able to overcome some of those dips in the road. A normal relationship. You know the formula. A dude and a girl, man and a woman. Now, that's a nice picture. And it's kind of the way it is through 99.99% of the world. That's what it is. It's a man and a woman, they fall in love, and there they are. Now, the problem with this is, although it's a godly plan, God put it together, it's a good thing. It's just that it's so fragile. Because that's all there is. If just a man and a woman get together and they love each other, no matter how much they love each other, any one of them fails, and the marriage can fail. So if you get nothing else for the rest of the week, you need to know that there needs to be a third person in a marriage. What? If I said that outside these doors, they go, we're going to that church. No, there needs to be a third person in that marriage. First of all, this is a two-way thing. And as long as those two-way bonds are strong, then that's a good thing. But the tie is so easily broken. So let's look at it this way. We have that man and the woman still, but I want to throw a third person into there. And here's why. Because now this relationship is no longer just left and right. It now has an extra dimension to it. And let me tell you the secret to all of this. I'll draw pictures with it. You like the way I did that arrow? If I have a relationship with God, and a woman has a relationship with God, how much stronger is our relationship to each other? Because we now have the power of the relationship is a power that comes from the Creator himself. Because now, if I defile that marriage, or if I break that marriage, I now have aught with him. That's serious. This is serious too, but that's real serious. I'm jeopardizing my soul. So now I have a responsibility two ways. And as long as I keep this responsibility, I'll keep this one. As long as I keep my relationship to God and my wife keeps her relationship to God, then this one's going to stay. That marriage will not fail. First of all, marriages don't fail. People fail. And the marriage is just the victim. People fail. And don't ever push it off on the marriage fail. You know, it's people fail. But this person with that relationship to God, he has to fail in his relationship to God to dissolve that marriage. Or she does. But you see that the bond is much stronger. And if I know, as a Christian man, that I am marrying somebody who's a Christian woman who loves God like that, then I know that that bond is strong. And I know that I trust her to not fail the marriage. And I'm going to have to work on my relationship to God so I don't fail the marriage by whatever means that there is. Very important. If you take nothing else with this, understand that if God's in a marriage, if I don't know everybody in here, there's a number of you I may have seen before or not seen before. Just if you don't have a relationship with God, let me tell you what. The greatest blessing there is knowing she's not going to fail my marriage. I trust her because I trust God, and I trust her relationship to God. And that is a powerful thing. I don't have to worry about that. That's one stress that's not in my life anymore. And I just have to make sure that I encourage my spouse, and that I keep her holy, and that I encourage her spiritual life so that nothing ever gets in the way of her relationship to God, which could cause me problems. okay, I'll be selfish there.
It could cause me problems.
God's plan. So men ought to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loves himself.
I'm not very good with King James. Loveth. I trip over the ith.
This love here, that's agape.
What are most marriages in the world based on? You know the word? Anybody? You know the Greek word? Eros. The physical attraction. That's what starts a lot of relationships. Oh, boy, she's cute. And that can start all of that. These relationships, we want to be based on agape. And if you marry somebody without having that, you need to find a way to develop it right quick, because that's what will hold you together. So men ought to love their wives, agape their wives. You know what agape means? That's the kind of love God had in giving his son for us. That's a love in spite of. That's the selfless love. That's the giving love. And it's a commanded love. It's something I can say, you need to do that. And you can learn to do that. It's something you can learn. Something you can do. Love your wives as your own bodies. And nobody ever hated himself, right? As the scripture continues. Hey, well, you don't hate your own body? You miss. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and he shall be joined unto his wife, and the two shall be one flesh. Let me tell you the physics of marriage. Okay, you ready? Here's the math. You like math? No. Okay. Kathy plus David, as a couple, are greater than the sum of Kathy and David. Did you get that? I'm going to give preference to one another in brotherly love. A plus B. A plus B is greater than A and B. So, Kathy and I, if you just summed us up, you know, we would be this. But as a couple, we are better than the sum of the two parts. It's the wonderful thing about a godly marriage is that we can be better. And together, we should be more effective in the Lord's work. We should be more effective in the world. Anybody ever read the last chapter of Proverbs? Isn't that great? You read it. this guy's describing his wife. Well, you know what? First of all, it's impossible. No, this human does not exist. She buys and sells property. She takes care of the kids. She makes sure that the bread is baked and everything is ready for the kids. She goes and runs businesses on the side to help the income of the family. And her husband can sit at the gate with the other old guys and go, "Wow, I got a great wife." She doesn't exist. It's something to say. These are attributes that you should strive for. But together, If we have that together, we as a couple, and especially as a Christian couple, we now can work toward that and seeing the result of a godly family and the power that's there. So, we're going to have a word for the day, and tomorrow we're going to have a word for the day, and then Saturday we're going to have a word for the day, and Saturday we're going to talk about all three words together. So, you have to be here all three nights. Or else you'll miss two of the words. I may mention them, but you're not going to get the full benefit. Awareness. Awareness. That sounds simple, doesn't it? I know what awareness is. It's being aware. It's knowing things. Let me tell you about the real point of awareness. A year ago, when Matt asked me to do this, I prayed hard about it. I want to teach people something that I don't know. I'm going to research and I want to learn some more things, and I want to find some details that nobody's ever told me before. And the company, in their wisdom, sent me to a Harvard Business School extension course in Texas. And the guy got up there, and it was a room full of people who go to church. From all over the country, and all these people are worshipers. Well, you know, there's Pentecostals, there's a couple of Catholics, but they're all people that claim to know God. So at least I had some peers that if I said God in the room, nobody would think, oh, what are you, you know, nobody would do that. So I could be comfortable in there, and we could speak some of the same language. And we sat in there, and this guy, this $1,000 a day consultant guy that had learned all this stuff, got up there, and he started telling us all of these things and these attributes that we can have if we want to have better interactions with our employees and with our peers and with our bosses and all of these powerful things. And all he was doing is just describing Jesus. And I started saying, you know, that sounds just like what Jesus did back in here. And Joey, my friend Joey, who's a lead singer in a gospel rock band or something like that in Waco, Texas, he goes, oh yeah, that's right. And then the guy from Louisiana goes, well, I'll be. And then I said, well, you know, they talk about getting into people's lives and understanding them a little bit and establishing a rapport with people so that you can communicate better. You know, if that's not a Jesus trait, I don't know what is. How do you think that gospel word to word went around during the first centuries? People talking to people on the road as they traveled in groups back and forth between towns, and they talked to one another and they got to know one another and says, oh, you're the cousin of so-and-so. Well, oh, you're a tent maker? And they establish these networks and they get to know one another, and then they say something wrong and the guy gets upset. You go, awareness. I know not to say that again. That's what awareness is. It's understanding buttons. Good buttons and bad buttons. Does anybody in here have a button? And I'm not talking about one of these things. Matt has a button. I got a button too. I've got good buttons and I've got bad buttons. The first person that you need to be aware of in order to have good relationships with people, and this is heavily involved in your relationship with your spouse, is yourself. I'm going to tell you about the fault that a lot of Christians have. They never want to admit that they like something. They don't want to say that this pleases me because they're afraid of being vain or being, or you know, putting themselves up or wanting something for self. But, you know, God created selves. I bet that word has never been spoken in a pulpit before. I bet that phrase has never been spoken. God created selves. He created you, and he understands as our creator that we have individual needs and that we have likes and dislikes. And the way we were raised and the atmosphere we were raised in and the people we were raised around helped shape some of those things. But I don't like raspberries. Well, I'm allergic to them too, but I don't like them either. And I'm not a big fan of kiwis unless they're in some of the, you know. It's being aware of what you like and what makes you feel good and what makes you upset is very important. Now, I want you to combine awareness with thank you. You didn't push my bad button. Thank you. And now Kathy knows that, that must be his bad button. Are you getting the drift here? Awareness is so important. Awareness of coworkers. It's important to me to know that one of my coworkers had a heart attack. Not only for his own safety, but now I can talk to him. And when I talk to him, I have that in the back of my brain. And when I want, I don't go offer him sugar donuts and garbage like that, because I don't do that anyway. But if I were so inclined to do that, I wouldn't do that to him. Well, that would be insensitive. I make sure if we have a little breakfast something, there's bananas and fruit there too. You know, because I got a couple of people there who've had heart attacks and heart problems. And why? And just that simple awareness shows that I'm considering that person individually. And I don't mind letting them know, hey, I understand. I didn't want to just get donuts because, you know, I know that's going to affect your health situation. So I brought this stuff for you. Is that simple? Is that something that you think Jesus would do? I mean, seriously, it's a simple act of kindness, and it's something that we understand by getting involved in people's lives. We can understand them better, and we can consider them. Hebrews 10:24, consider how to spur one another on to love and good works. how to encourage, or and if you look at, do a word study on that, it actually is conspire. That's not just think about. It's actually conspiring and contemplating and plotting on how to encourage somebody. Don't you have to know a little something about somebody in order to achieve that? Now, I play guitar. You want to turn my prop? Talk about guitars. That's going to get my attention. Oh, really? Yeah. Scripture is going to get my attention more. But just on a simple physical joy thing, hey, if you talk about that, you understand that I think about that, and next time you want to encourage me, you give me a card and it has a little picture of a guitar on it or something of that nature, you know what? That's extra special. You thought about what I like enough to share that with me and to show me that I think about what you like. Now, does this sound just oversimplified to you? It really is very simple. But awareness of what somebody else likes and dislikes and their comfort zone and their discomfort zone is so important if we want to communicate with others. Who do we want to communicate with as Christians? If I want to share the gospel with somebody, who do I communicate with? Anybody. But the more I know about them, I witnessed something this morning over at Starbucks. I was sitting there just putting some final thoughts together and soaking down about 6 quarts of caffeine. And that was only 5. I hate to exaggerate. But there was a guy sitting there, and nobody knew him. He was just sitting at the table studying. He was over here. And one of the clerks went on break, and she came out, and he says, "Would you like to see what I'm reading?" And she's like, "I don't know." And this kid, he had a Bible open. And he said, "Would you like to see what I'm reading? I'm reading about David and Goliath. Have you ever heard that story?" He goes, "Well, yeah, I heard it way back when." He says, "It's a great story." This guy asked her a simple question, found out where she was, and his skill, he didn't look, this is not a preacher. This is a kid in a t-shirt and jeans who found a way in just a moment's time to understand something about somebody else enough to open a door that he could tell her a story from God's Word. I was impressed. I was seriously impressed. Because what we did, oh, that person won't listen. We prejudge people and instead of just getting to know them. You know, and how did Jesus approach anybody? How did he teach? What method did he use most often? Whether he was disciplining somebody verbally, whether he was encouraging them, or whatever. What method did he use? You can speak it up if you know. Questions. He asked questions. Brother Stredick last night, the devotional over at Hayward, talked about Jesus calming the water. He says, "Where's your faith?" He asked the guys. He wasn't waiting for an answer. He wasn't expecting them to go, "Oh, I left it at home. The dog ate it. I left it. You know, oh, I forgot. I thought that was Thursday." No. He asked a question. He didn't expect an answer. But by asking a question, you get other people involved and you find out things. Had this little guy at Starbucks this morning, had he just said, "I want to share with you the story of David and Goliath," she would have gone, "I'm on break." Just that quick. But by asking a question and getting somebody involved in the conversation, he found out something about her, and she opened up, and they were able to sit and talk for a few minutes. Simply asking a question. So why are we afraid of asking questions? What do you think, Sherry? I had to ask you a question. I'm sorry. There's skill in asking questions too, but awareness is so important. If we want to communicate the gospel with somebody, if we want to get along with our spouse, do you think it's important that I know what pleases Kathy? And I miss it most of the time, by the way. 35 years and I still don't know all of it. And she don't know all of it either. But But it's a work in progress, and it will be until the day one of us or both of us passes on. It's that glorious interaction of, because we change, don't we? I like things now I didn't like 10 years ago. And I don't like things now that I used to like. But one of the best gifts that you can give to your spouse, or to anybody else for that matter, any other relationship that you might have, person to person, is to tell them what you like. Just tell somebody what you like. And if it's in the form of saying thank you, that's even more powerful. Or just in conversation. I really like it when you just walk up and scratch the back of my head. I'm just making something up here. That's not really a button for me. I'm just I really like it when you do that. And women, learn that skill. Guys want to please. We want to please ladies. It's in the nature. You like marigolds, I'm getting marigolds. You like roses, I'm finding roses. You like frogs and snakes and spiders, I'm getting frogs and snakes and spiders because I want to please. I want to please my girl. Guys like that. And ladies, you should be all over that. I'm sorry. say what you like. And it doesn't have to be write a list and say everything that you like, but share what you like with them. Because one thing guys don't like, Matt doesn't know this yet as a single guy, games. We don't like having to guess. I'm sorry. You don't like it? Okay. We like to know. So every now and then, throw us a bone. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you enjoy. Tell us what gives you pleasure or what makes you happy or some simple thing that you'd like to do sometime. Simple things like that. If you don't know, we might never figure it out because we're not that smart, most of us. So, some good things to know. Before you say I do. Children? Yes? No? How many? Is that important? Wouldn't it be a shame if you're walking down the aisle, "Hoop, we can have kids now." She goes, "What?" It's not the time to find that out. But then again, that's something that 10 years down the line can change, can't it? I didn't want kids, but you know what? I'm thinking about it now. The whole biological clock's ticking. I need to feather the nest. How to raise those kids. More marriages broken up. More Christian marriages broken up over something like this, probably, than anything. How to raise the children. And mistakes in raising children. And arguments over raising children. And sometimes, you know, a couple will get there just like, simply as how and when to discipline. You think that's not important? You ain't spanking my kid. You hear that? And I worked in the flatlands of Oakland putting in telephones for many years, and I saw this all the time. And I saw knock down, drag out, "You ain't spanking my kid." You know, and then you know what the retort was. "Well, it's my kid too." And that argument need never happen. That should have been discussed a long time before they ever put a ring on a finger. That should have been out a long time ago. Here we go. I'll put the short list up. What about sports? We have a couple now at odds that I know. Because one party wants them involved in soccer, which takes them up Sunday morning sometimes, Wednesday nights. The other one doesn't, and it's this thing back and forth. And it's caused some problems in their lives. What about Bible class attendance? That's important. These kids need to go to Bible class. I'm going to be proud of Stephanie for a second. I'm proud of her all the time, but I'm going to be proud of her right now because she sat in a basically a rudimentary Bible class last semester. Anyway, she sat there, and her boyfriend Jordan, really nice guy by the way. They're asking, the teacher got up there and he asked what the Septuagint was, and out of I don't know how many kids in the class, she's the only one that knew. She raised her hand and then she got it wrong. Well, she was thinking Pentateuch. And she goes, then she starts describing the Pentateuch. She goes, no, that's the Pentateuch. And Jordan goes, you knew that? Where'd you learn all that stuff? She says, we had a Bible class program back at Hayward. They learned that stuff. That was basic stuff when they were growing up, going to Bible class. So we were quite proud of that and the fact that she knew that. But Bible class attendance is very important. You want to raise children in the Lord? That's very important. I'll tell you the story about Jerry Vickery. I was preaching in a little congregation up in Toledo, Oregon. And this guy walked in one time and he goes, I need to be baptized. I said, excuse me, who are you? He says, my name's Jerry Vicker and I need to be baptized. He didn't read two words in English. He was fairly illiterate. He had had a pretty hard life. But his grandparents, when he went back east to Tennessee during the summers to visit his grandparents, they always took him to Bible class. And he was running into some trouble in his life and he didn't know where to go, and he realized that he needed to be baptized. Bible class saved his soul. How about tight clothes? I don't want my wife running around in tight clothes. But you need to know that. I'm sorry. How would you approach something like that with somebody you're not married to? Remember how to say thank you? Thank you for dressing modestly. It really makes me proud of you, and it's so good to know that you're concerned about your image. Thank you. What a great way to approach a topic like that. I really appreciate that you dress modestly in public. That really, that's just great to me. That gets me right here. How about contraceptives? That's an important topic. It's something you might need to deal with. And it could come up in conversation. Or it could come up, back with question number one. Those are things that, if you can't talk about those things before you get married, you probably shouldn't get married until you can. You really need to be able to discuss hard topics. How about etiquette? I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, these are things that are important to people. And they are things that can get in the way of a marriage or a relationship. How you eat. Things that bug you. I mean, why wouldn't you want to talk about stuff like that? And how would you approach a topic like that? Say the word. Thank you. Hey, I really appreciate that your table manners today. You just did a wonderful job, and it makes me proud to sit and eat with you. Oops. Now, that guy now knows that, this is important to her. I better brush up on these things because I really want to please her. How about housework? How about driving safety? I'll tell you about my grandmother and grandfather. West Texas. She sat in the back, he sat in the front. And there are fingerprints in that Ford LTD in the in the door rest for where she grabbed on because she didn't like the way he drove. And I don't know if you know about West Texas, but the guy sit in the front and the girl sit in the back. It's just, if there's two couples, the guys will sit in the front and the girls will sit in the back. It's just the way it is, or it was back in 1960. But the whole idea is, she sits back there, grandma sits in the back, and she would sit directly behind him so she could whack him if he was if he wasn't driving well. But driving safety is important. Well, I don't want her to feel uncomfortable the way I'm driving. And I don't want to feel uncomfortable when she's driving either. So those are kind of things that you need to, if you've already married and you have that problem, you need to work that out, okay? And with love to one another. How about progressive or conservative? That issue comes up all the time. How about what do I give? What organizations do I support? I want to give money to the little kittens. I'm sorry. No. That's a button. I don't like cats. That's a button. How about television and movies? Those are simple little things, but you know, those are things that can affect a relationship. How about bathing and hygiene? Oh, I really like it right after you take a bath. Of course, what she's really saying is, boy, you stink most of the time. But I really like it right after you take a bath. Thank you for shaving. You know, thank you for getting a haircut. Thank you for finally brushing your teeth. How about facial hair from either party? How about body art? I mean, there's people with tattoos when they become Christians. I mean, and that offends some people. If you were around Kathy's grandma and you had a tattoo, there's going to be fighting words. That's not going to go over well. That's a bad conversation. It really offended her. So those are the kind of things you might want to know about one another. Awareness of God. And we're going to shut down in here in just a little bit, but I want you to understand that if we're going to have a relationship with one another, we need to be aware of certain things. It's very important that we're aware of what God wants. And fortunately, he said thank you to us in offering everything he likes and dislikes in his word. And he's given us everything we need to know about him. We just have to look it up and discover it and continue on with that. 1 John 4 verse 2 says, hereby know ye the Spirit of God. You know, we can know the Spirit of God. We can know the nature of God. We know what he likes and dislikes through the Old Testament, through the New Testament. We know about how loving he is because he is love. We know how sacrificial he is because he wrote sacrifice. We can understand God. And you want to know what God thinks about some of the petty things, the little things, when it comes to obeying him? Think about Nadab and Abihu. Yep, the ark's falling. Let's steady it. Or strange fire. Offering strange, well, it's a flame. God will never know the difference. You know, well, yeah, he will. Is God concerned about the details? Yeah. God's concerned about the details. But we can know stuff like that about God. We can know how he wants our heart to be. And we can know how he wants us to act in life. 1 John 4, 7 and 8. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God. And everyone that loveth is born of God and knows God. Why? Because God is what? God is love. If we don't love, then we don't know him. You see how much more powerful that relationship with us two can be if we both have that love relationship with him? Because now I know better how to agape Kathy. That's important. Knowing how to love. And it's not something that just springs on you automatically. You have to learn it. It's an acquired skill, and it's something that's worth working on the rest of your life. Did I say automatically? Okay. Awareness of Jesus. I'm glad we can have a little fun. This because it's Thursday night, and you guys are going to want to go to bed and got to go to work and school and stuff tomorrow. So I really appreciate you being here. Seriously, I thank you so much for that. It encouraged me greatly. But Ephesians 3:19, and to know the love of Christ, which passes knowledge, you know, that peace that passes understanding, we can know the love of Christ. And all we have to do really is look at him, read about him, and see how he treated other people, and we can know how powerful that love is. But here's something Paul said that always struck me. What's the? There's a song, and it's, I forget what version it's from. It's, I want to know Christ and the power of his rising. It says, that I may know him. You know, what does it not say here? It doesn't say that I may know about him. It's so that we want to know him. We want to get to know the person who is Jesus Christ. The person that walked on the earth and the way he interacted with individuals. And I want to know why he treated that woman the way he did, and she's talking about the crumbs falling off the table and stuff like that. Why? What? It sounds ugly if you're just listening to it, but then you realize that he's already aware of every one of us. He knows exactly what our limitations are. He knows what your button is, and he knows what my button is, and he knows how to interact with us, and he's engaged with us, and we just need to be that engaged with him and with our brethren around us. The power of his resurrection, the fellowship of his sufferings, conforming to his death. I want to know that guy. I want to know what motivated him to die for me. Not just about him. I want to know the guy. Just like I knew about Kathy, and it took a long time to get to know Kathy. And I know that you, those of you who are in long-time relationships, the same way. 35 years, and it's still going. I'm still learning things. So the foundations of a great marriage: love, awareness, and selflessness. Because really, agape is getting rid of self and pouring everything at the other person. Jesus got rid of self and sacrificed what he had for us. The burden of Calvary was tremendous, and to know that in the midst of all the blood and sweat and confusion and the things that went on at the cross, the ugliness of the scene and the smell and the tears and the wailing and the sound of the nails and the wheezing and all the ugly things that are around the cross, that he had time to stay focused on what was important to him, and that was the salvation of man, and still forgiving people while he's up there amidst all of this. If we can learn anything, it's to stay focused on what's important to us. In our relationships with our spouse, in our relationships with one another, elders, your relationship to the congregation, all should be so important. Our relationship to our children. We should be aware of what our children want and need and desire, and what pushes their buttons. And we should be proud and happy to push those buttons every now and then to encourage them. And we'll talk about that part tomorrow a little bit more as we lead into tomorrow's word for the day. So, I want to know Christ. I want to know him. And it's important that each of us work for the rest of our lot time here on our relationship with our Lord. It's possible that someone here has failed in that relationship and has wandered away. It's possible that some of you have never had that relationship with him, and the time is available and made available for you to do so. You can know Christ. You can know the creator of everything, and you can get to a personal relationship. I know that saying's worn out quite a bit by the religious world. You know, they talk about their personal relationship. Well, guess what? It is. It's an intense personal relationship, and you can know your brother, and he's willing to take you as a brother and as someone who can gather around the throne with him in glory. But you've got to obey him. You've got to do what he says. If you need to know what that is, we can go into detail. We'll be glad to talk with you, and I know the men here will be also. But please, if you need to change the direction of your life in relationship to God, please take hold of that now as we stand and sing.